This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And we're back now with our Week in Review. With us is Renee Loth, editor of Architecture Boston, and Peter Canellos, editorial page editor of the Boston Globe.
And we want to mention some breaking news, by the way. We were talking before the break about the Sandy Hook shootings and the anniversary this weekend. There's now news that there has been a shooting at Arapahoe High School in Littleton, Colorado, which apparently is not that far from Columbine, where the terrible high school shooting happened many years ago. We'll be following that throughout the afternoon on All Things Considered. We want to talk now a little about what I think can only be called the saga with the state's gaming law here in Massachusetts. More twists and turns by the day, it seems. Just within about that past half hour, the Gaming Commission approved the revised deal between Wynn Resorts and the City of Everett. That was by a 4-0 vote. Then earlier this week, Caesars Entertainment sued the gaming chairman, Steve Crosby. They say he has a conflict of interest that sabotaged their efforts to try to open a casino at Suffolk Downs. And earlier this week, Crosby insisted that the commission's work has been transparent.
Every word I utter about this business is on our website and in a transcript, and the video is streamed live on the web. And I think that will help fair and reasonable people understand that I am exercising reasonable judgment in being a part of this process because it's such a transparent process.
Meanwhile, a vote is expected in February on the revised Revere-only plan, and casino opponents are preparing for a long fight. The chair of a group called Repeal the Casino Deal, John Ribeiro, told us this week that the no voters will have to mobilize.
Clearly, they need to step up now, and they're energized to organize their community and stop this casino once and for all.
Peter, could you give us your overall assessment of the process, which certainly looks very messy from the outside? Does it feel like to you like it's going well?
Well, it depends on what your viewpoint is. I think that when they set up this law, they did say they wanted to have the most scrupulous process in the country, the toughest amount of vetting, and that part of it seems to have followed through. On the other hand, I think the people in Massachusetts are seeing that gambling is a can of worms, as some of the critics have said, and that there's no easy answer to some of these siting sessions, and the people who are involved do play hardball in a variety of ways, and so I would expect there'd be more lawsuits and more controversy to come.
Do you think the Gambling Commission's sort of a strictness in terms of its vetting is overall a good thing for Massachusetts?
I think the strictness is a good thing. I think the situation with Caesars and with that hotel chain connection is a little bit deceptive because an investigator, I think, rightly flagged that there was a problem with one of Caesars' business partners, but there's no evidence that that was really the reason that they were dumped by the Suffolk Downs group, and now they're trying to claim that, somehow the Gambling Commission and Steve Crosby had been involved in this and responsible for this. And anyway, that's a very complicated kind of fact pattern, but it just goes to the question of, so much machinations for what gain in Massachusetts, which is why people are pushing the idea of a repeal.
And that complicated fact pattern, as you put it, has put Steve Crosby, the chairman, in a very uncomfortable position. Renee Loth, do you think he can still oversee this process, or does he need to consider stepping aside in some form?
Well, he's already agreed to recuse himself from some votes, which I'm expecting that he was not part of the vote in Everett this afternoon. But, when you're going to be holding other people up to, high ethical standards, you yourself have to be like Caesar's wife, which I realize is a pun, but you have to be above reproach, and so Steve Crosby is a big target, and he might have expected that somebody would try to undermine him when he has taken strong stands against Caesars. There's a little bit of a feeling of sour grapes, I think, to that lawsuit, but I can also understand how Caesars would want the negative report to go away or to be called null and void, mostly because of the way it could haunt their subsequent efforts to open casinos in other locations, not necessarily here in Massachusetts.
Now, Crosby's position is that he's staying put. Do you think he'll be able to abide by that position?
I do. I really do.
Let's move on to other news stories this week. I want to talk a little bit about Mayor Tom Menino, who gave his last major public speech on Tuesday to Boston's business community, the Boston Chamber of Commerce. Let's listen to a little bit of what he had to say.
More of the same, even a good same, won't be enough. You, the partners in the business community, will need to see that it's in your interest, too, the city isn't a place divided. You aren't talking about this in your boardrooms. You should be. You aren't worrying about what it means for your workforce, your customers. You are missing the boat. If you don't think a new generation of division will change the city, you haven't looked around the world, where deep inequalities breed deep distrust.
Outgoing Mayor Tom Menino talking earlier this week there about growing economic disparity in the city. Peter, let me start with you. You know, Mayor Menino, never sort of famous for great oratory, but I was sort of impressed by that speech. I'm wondering what you heard there.
Yeah, I heard the same thing. I mean, I think economic inequality is a growing issue and it's a growing concern. And I admire the mayor and many people in his administration I know who have been focusing on this issue. I know that Mayor-elect Marty Walsh has talked about this and is also concerned about it. But it was a wise statement to present this as a new form of division that will be damaging to Boston in the way that some of the racial and class divisions of the past have been, and to try to put it on the radar screen of the business community, which is in a position to do quite a lot about it.
Renee, I'm wondering what you heard in that speech, or what's striking you about sort of these final days in Mayor Menino's in office for Mayor Menino?
Yeah, you know, I watched that speech. The themes that he underlined in the speech were all about change. You know, the changes in Boston since 1993, when he first took office, are, you know, immense. And he was able to tick off a number of achievements, from, you know, the lower dropout rates to licensing 50 food trucks, you know, a whole range of things that he went through. So I think, and of course, now we are facing a time of terrific change, with all of the anxieties that come with that, especially after, you know, a long period of kind of political stability in the city. One thing that I don't think anyone necessarily picked up on, but I found striking in the speech, was Menino mentioned that in 2014, we will have more people working in the city of Boston than at any time in our history. These are not people necessarily living here, but who commute in for the jobs that are booming in Boston, especially around the downtown area. And what that says to me is that we will have a tremendous amount of pressure on public transportation and on congestion in that part of the city, if we are not to choke on our own growth, which I think this is going to be a challenge for Marty Walsh and for the legislature, which controls the T budget. If we're not going to, you know, choke on our own growth, we need to do something about that.
Renee and Peter, Marty Walsh was the subject of a page one story in The Globe today, in which The Globe portrays it as him backpedaling from one of his campaign promises, which is an overhaul of the BRA. Now, last week, I went to part of that mayor's boot camp held for newly elected mayors at the Harvard Kennedy School, where Mayor Walsh was. And I was struck when I read that story this morning about something that the director of the Harvard Institute of Politics had said to me about one of the most important messages relayed at that boot camp. And here's what he said. This is Trey Grayson, and the director of the Institute of Politics.
Everything you say now is the gospel. So be careful with public pronouncements. You don't want to change your mind and look like you're waffling. So don't be afraid to delay a decision if you don't have sufficient information. Now explain it. Be transparent about why maybe you haven't made the decision. Don't be afraid to say you don't know, especially at the beginning. People are going to be more forgiving of the fact that you don't know something, because the odds are you don't know because you're just getting started.
Again, that's Trey Grayson basically paraphrasing the advice given to the new mayors, which my thought was seemed fairly basic. However, when I talked to Marty Walsh later about what was one of the key messages you heard today, here's what he said to me.
Another piece of lessons learned is that everything that you say as a mayor now is gospel. You know, if you just make a kind of a throwaway comment, if you will, it could turn into a major story. So you'd be very careful with that.
So that made me think that Marty really had absorbed that message. And I'm wondering if you, Renee and Peter, think that, do we see here Mayor-elect Marty Walsh stepping back, realizing I have to rethink what I said during my campaign? What's really possible? What's going on there as far as the thought process, do you think?
Well, you know, this is a good example of that old political chestnut, that there's a poetry to campaigning and the prose to governing. You know, when you get into public office and you find out what the realities are on the ground, you see that the poetic promises that you've made in your campaign trail cannot always be executed seamlessly. Eliminating the BRA was always going to take, I think, an act of the legislature and certainly some time. There were a lot of people in the business and development community who were very nervous about it. Today, now he's saying that he doesn't want to, you know, kill the goose that's laying the golden egg in terms of our, you know, booming development downtown. And, you know, he's just realizing that it's a lot more complicated than it seemed.
Peter Canales, you think smart move for Marty Walsh to say, listen, we got to stop and really think hard before we do anything sudden?
Well, I'm still tripping on the idea that Boston mayoral campaigning involves poetry with Medina and Walsh in there. But what I do think is that this whole question of blowing up the BRA and changing the BRA is such a general statement as to be kind of meaningless. I mean, there's a lot of criticism of the way that Menino handled development, which is basically that he ran it out of his back pocket. And somehow the shorthand for that becomes we're going to get rid of the BRA. But are they going to get rid of linkage payments? Are they going to get rid of the planning division? I mean, how are they going to restructure the BRA? So there was always going to be what's really happening here question that Walsh would have to answer after the election on the BRA. And I just hope he's thinking it through. And I think he's wise to delay it and think it through.
Well, on that, Peter Canellis, editorial page editor of the Boston Globe, and Renee Loth, editor of Architecture Boston, columnist for the Boston Globe. Peter and Renee, thank you both so much. Have great weekends to both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And stay with us. Coming up, the tragedy at Sandy Hook has renewed debate over whether the increasingly violent nature of video games might play a role in real-life violence. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.